Hello, and welcome to a very spooky episode of Mysteries of Science. My name's Dan, and I'm the editor of Science and Nature, a monthly magazine from the team behind The Week Junior.
And I'm Kieran, the features editor. In every issue of Science and Nature, we explore the universe through our in-depth features, news stories, awe-inspiring images, interviews with top experts, and much more.
If you're new to the podcast, welcome. In each episode, we dive into one of my favourite parts of the magazine, Mysteries of Science. We look at the stories that have left scientists scratching their heads and, despite their best attempts, still stay well and truly unsolved. From mythical monsters to questions about life in the universe, there are mysteries of science everywhere, and we love them.
Today's mystery is an absolute cracker. It is one of the mysteries that terrifies and intrigues me in equal measure. The Curse of Tutankhamun.
Ooh, yes. We're in the world of mummies and magic, aren't we?
We are indeed. Tutankhamun, the boy prince, is one of the most famous rulers of ancient Egypt. And when his tomb was found in 1922, it blew everyone away. His mummy was buried with a hoard of treasure, some of the best preserved objects that have ever been found from that period of history. Intriguingly, there was also rumours to be a curse that would bring tragedy to those who had disturbed his final resting place. When some of the explorers who found the tomb faced grisly deaths a short time later, it seemed as though the dark magic was working.
So there's loads for us to investigate today, and here's what some of you wanted us to find out.
Hi, I'm Peter. And how many pyramids are there in Egypt?
How do you know if a mummy is cursed?
Do mummies exist or not?
How are mummies mummified?
Are you ready then, Dan? I think we need to put on our brave faces for this one. And we'll find out more about Tutankhamun. We'll find out about his life and why his tomb was so important. And then we'll discover whether this deadly curse really did exist.
On top of that, we'll meet the people who found his tomb, find out why it caused such a huge reaction around the world, and find out what modern technology is revealing about these incredible finds.
As ever, we can't do this alone. To be honest, I'm pretty relieved about that. This is a mystery that has scared me for years. Thankfully, today we are in some safe hands. We've got real-life archaeologists. Those are the people who dig up signs of past human life to help us learn more about history. And we've got some expert authors and someone whose job actually involves protecting a real Egyptian curse in a museum. We did say it might get spooky.
This is Mysteries of Science.
Well, if this mystery is all about Tutankhamun, shall we take a bit of time to get to know him better?
Great idea, Kieran. You know, when I hear about Tutankhamun, what I picture is his famous death mask. You know the one, the gold, beautiful gold mask that he was wearing on his tomb? It's a classic.
It is a classic, and there are lots of famous symbols of Egypt, but I agree, I think that's one that stands out. And I can remember when I visited ancient Egyptian exhibitions as a child that they were usually cut pretty short because I really got scared by the mummies and sort of the general feeling of,
of
spookiness that emanated through it. But I think I'm right in saying that Tutankhamun was a king of ancient Egypt. He died when he was quite young.
That's right, yeah. He died when he was very young. He was really rich, and this vast treasure hoard of riches was buried alongside him. And you know, there's also this thing about the curse, but we can come back to that later. But let's hear from somebody who knows much more than me and you. This is Dr. Daniel Potter from the National Museum of Scotland, and he is one of the UK's leading Egyptologists.
We can say quite a lot about some elements of his life and not much about others. Which is the same for a lot of ancient people, because what we have for evidence isn't necessarily the whole picture. So for Tutankhamun, we know he came to the throne about age 8 or 9. We know he had around 10 years in his reign as king, so died maybe around the age of 18, 19. So we know a lot by having context around him. So we know about some of the women who looked after him as a child, so his nurses. We know about his tutors. We know about his siblings. And then, really, piecing bits together about what's going on, because not everything in ancient Egypt lasted forever. The monuments that he built, some stayed up, some were taken down, either shortly after he died or a long time. So we find fragments, little hints of what was going on.
Tutankhamun was part of the 18th dynasty of ancient Egypt, which launched a new era for the nation.
So the 18th dynasty, what is a dynasty?
Well, a dynasty is like a long line of kings and queens, rulers, and they're all part of the same family. First, let's find out how the tomb was found.
My name's Catherine Hulick. You might remember me from the episode All About Aliens. I write about science for kids, and I'm the author of the book Strange But True about the science and history behind 10 of the world's greatest mysteries, and that includes aliens as well as cursed mummies.
We asked Catherine to tell us about King Tut's tomb and how it was discovered.
Yeah, so Howard Carter was the archaeologist who wound up discovering it, and he'd been searching for 6 years. Like, he knew there was this tomb probably in that area of this boy pharaoh, Tutankhamun, and he just hadn't been able to find it. And his supporter, Lord Carnarvon, was basically funding all these expeditions, and he'd said, you know, I'm done. I don't want to pay for any more of this because you're not finding anything. And Carter convinced him to let him go for one more year, and that's the year that he found it. In November of 1922, one of his workers came across a step that led down to the opening to the tomb.
So what exactly lay in the tomb? Well, our guide is David Long, the author of Amazing Treasures, which reveals the secrets of the world's most incredible objects and locations.
It was such an enormous hoard, more than 5,000 items. And when it was first discovered 100 years ago, it was the first discovery of its kind sort of ever. And I would argue that it hasn't been eclipsed in the following 100 years either. So a lot of the treasure was, very obviously precious, like a solid gold death mask. But a lot of the other things they found were normal everyday things that the ancient Egyptians used 3,000 years ago in their normal everyday lives. So food and bowls and utensils and daggers and that kind of thing. And it means that whilst for many people the solid gold items are the most interesting, for working archaeologists and historians, an enormous amount was found out about life in the ancient world from these really quite ordinary objects, because very often they don't survive, they're not found, they're not rescued, so we don't know about them. So it's possible to find something quite humble and quite simple, like a bowl or a basket, and it might be the only one left in the world. So I think that's its importance.
It's really hard to overstate how incredible this discovery was, both in terms of the scale of what was found in King Tut's tomb, but also in terms of the variety and the condition that it was kept in. I mean, just imagine how it must feel to be the first person to step inside a tomb that has been sealed off from the rest of the world for thousands of years. You're the first person to be there for millennia. It would have been incredible, but it would have been spooky too. Who was to say what was lurking in the darkness? Okay, so we've got ourselves a tomb hidden away in the Egyptian desert, jam-packed with treasures of all kinds. We know that King Tut has been very lucky because his tomb has somehow survived being raided, unlike many of his fellow pharaohs. And as a result of this, he becomes an overnight sensation and the face of a historical culture, a dynasty, a civilization.
Yep, so far so good.
Tell me now is the moment that the curse is coming into play.
Yes, you might be right. Everything's going really nicely for Carter, Lord Carnarvon, and the archaeologists at the site. Journalists from around the world are obsessing over each and every detail of the things that they bring out of that tomb. And then, suddenly, Lord Carnarvon dies. It's April 1923, and Lord Carnarvon, the man who funded Carter's expedition, suddenly dies in Cairo, Egypt's capital. It's mysterious, and the idea of a curse instantly takes hold.
So he died, and there, this idea kind of arose that he had died because they had opened the tomb, that the spirit of Tutankhamun was unpleased, or the spirits of the ancient Egyptians were unpleased, and that they had, you know, cursed the ones who disturbed their, you know, rest, and this is why he had died.
Rumors started swirling about the strange events that coincided with Carnarvon's death. First, it was said, Carter's dog died at the exact same time as Lord Carnarvon. Then tales began to circulate about Cairo's lights all going out.
Strangely, Carnarvon wasn't the only supposed victim of this curse. I did some research into this and found that five people's deaths are often connected to the story. There's Carnarvon, then George Gould I.
Visited the tomb and died in 1923.
A.C. Mace.
Helped to excavate the tomb. Died of poisoning in 1928.
Captain Richard Bethel.
Died the following year.
Finally, Carter himself. He died in 1939. Now, that's more than a decade after the tomb was opened, but some people say the curse was still to blame.
That is quite some powerful curse. I'm not buying it, though. There's got to be another explanation.
The famous quote that was put forward in a lot of the newspapers at the time was that death would come on swift wings for anyone who either disturbed the tomb or who toucheth the pharaoh, all these sort of varieties of writing. And that's nowhere in there at all. That was made up.
Death will come on swift wings. It's a good bit of poetry. But I looked into this as well, and Dan Potter is right. It is completely made up. A lot of text was found inside Tutankhamun's tomb, written in both hieroglyphics and hieratics, which is a simplified version. You can trawl through all of those pieces of text, and you won't find a single mention of a curse. Which leaves me wondering one thing. Who was telling porcupines?
So it appears that the Daily Mail, which is a UK-based newspaper, was the first one to report this death on swift wings idea. According to Dan Potter, this actually all came about because Lord Carnarvon only allowed one newspaper, which was The Times, to go into the tomb, like actually inside, to get the stories about what was being found. So other newspapers also wanted to tell their own stories, and I guess one about a killer curse was just as good an idea as any other, and it certainly shifted a lot of copies. But in reality, the five people associated with the curse just happened to die a few years later.
Wait. Hold on a second. You're telling me that all these years that I've been afraid of Mummy's curses have been wasted because they're not even real?
Well, it kind of depends on what you mean by real, really. There's clear evidence that curses did exist in ancient Egypt, or at least that that people believed in such things.
What we actually find when we look at the texts from ancient Egypt is that these feel much more like warnings for good behaviour. So that you should behave well in a tomb, that you should do the right things, and that if you don't do the right things and you don't behave yourself, then there'll be a punishment for it. And that the punishment most commonly are things about your own afterlife. So it's almost like you've spoiled someone else's afterlife. So what goes around comes around. So you find examples where one of my favourite ones is that if this negative behaviour continues, the person who's doing this will just be miserable. A very minor threat.
It sounds like the real curses are just an ancient equivalent of do not touch signs in a museum.
Beware of removing this stone from its place. As for anyone who puts a cover over it, the gods of the West, which is where you are buried in the West, where the sun sets, will reproach him very, 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 very much. So it and those signs at the end are just like put in etc. 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 It says, you know, very, 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 really forcefully. You know, it's very different from death will come on swift wings.
For the people of ancient Egypt, being allowed to rest in peace after you died was very important. It was so important that they took time to engrave carvings into stone and plead with people to treat their graves with respect. And then Carter and his fellow archaeologists were so keen to analyse their discovery that they didn't really take much notice of these written warnings. Items were like damaged and pulled out without that many records being made of exactly where they were found. This is very different to modern excavations. And there was really no teamwork either between Carter and local experts.
Now we archaeologists think about the past in a different way.
This is Rita Lucarelli, an Egyptologist and archaeologist who has studied magic within ancient Egypt. And she's currently leading a project that turns coffins into 3D models so that they can be better studied. I asked her how archaeology has changed since the time of Howard Carter and his team.
To those treasures, we don't even like to use anymore the word treasure, but we look at the past as an heritage that belongs, first of all, to the people living in that land, in that country, and then as a sort of global heritage that need to be preserved with the respect towards the beliefs of the people to which the remains or those objects belong to. Also, what has changed is that we don't bring anymore any archaeological artifacts to Europe or to other countries, but everything stays in Egypt. So that's a huge difference.
New technology is opening up a whole range of new possibilities, and Rita's at the real cutting edge of this modern archaeology. She's using futuristic 3D renders, which means that you can visit these historic sites without touching them. So she's kind of protecting them. Let's hear from her again.
And technologies also improved our way, our capacity to really take care of those archaeological finds in a better way without destroying the archaeological context, meaning that indeed we can have a lot of 3D, for instance, 3D models of objects, then therefore we don't need to touch so much as we did in the past, but we can work on the 3D copies. What I'm doing with this project is adding annotations to the 3D model. Annotations which are indeed sort of pop-up windows that help you to understand what is on the coffin in terms of decoration. So translation of the magical spells, explanation of the iconography, and also, of course, information about the origin of the coffin, if we know where it comes from, what's the name of the owner, and so on. And so I'm including all this information on the website of my project, the Book of the Dead in 3D.
This advance in technology not only helps to better understand ancient Egypt, but as Rita says, it better protects the objects and the remains that are found. Okay, Dan, I know we've already agreed that deadly curses aren't real, but while I had Rita, who knows a lot about ancient Egypt magic, I had to ask, should we be scared of curses like those found supposedly in King Tut's tomb and the ones that feature in the mummy films of Hollywood fame?
No, I don't think you should take Hollywood seriously, although it's kind of fun to take it seriously and to be kind of scared. I'm a lover of, anyway, the mummies movies and even of horror movies, speaking of exorcism and spells. My specialty is indeed the religion of ancient Egypt. Once you really access the primary sources, all these texts written by the Egyptian priest and copied on coffins, on papyrus, on tomb walls, you realize how magic, what we call magic for the ancient Egyptians, was a creative force, a creative power, which was totally positive and it was part of their religion.
So there you have it. Tutankhamun was a young pharaoh who has helped us to understand more about the world that he grew up in.
The discovery of his tomb was without a doubt one of the biggest finds in the 20th century. The wonders inside have inspired us for generations and provided archaeologists and Egyptologists with enough artifacts to keep them busy ever since.
And okay, there's not a real curse in his tomb, but his story is no less exciting or interesting because of that. And crucially, current and future excavations are being done in a more respectful way. Modern archaeologists don't need curses to tell them to behave properly. They just do it anyway.
We've heard from the experts. Now it's time for everyone listening to have your say. Do you think curses are real? Should we be scared of them? And why do you love ancient Egypt so much? We want to hear from you. Email hello@science-nature.co.uk to tell us what you think, either by writing in an email or recording your thoughts on a short video and sending it in.
We're going to include some of those emails in a future episode of Mysteries of Science, so make sure that you get involved now. And, of course, remember to pick up the latest copy of the Week Junior's Science and Nature magazine for even more Mysteries of Science.
We'll be back in 2 weeks with our next mystery. It's time to buckle up for a story that's equal parts inspiring and intriguing. We'll be looking at the story of Amelia Earhart, a world-famous pilot who mysteriously disappeared. We'll be investigating what really happened. Until then,
stay curious.